Good morning. Pretty hard to follow up two cute little kids out on the high. You know, kind of already starting out in the hole already. I should just let them wander around up here and nobody will pay attention to me. I appreciate the inclusion in the prayer. That summed it up exactly. I hope that I say something that you understand this morning, and that you're able to take it through your walk with Jesus this week in your daily lives. Thank you, Rich, for that. So, you heard me reference Hallmark movies, and I only watch them because my wife has them on the TV all the time in the background. But the Hallmark movie, within 5 minutes, maybe 10, if they're real creative, you know who the love interest is or what the storyline's going to be. You got it all figured out. Know how it's going to end and who's going to end up with who. And that's what I like about them. I said that before. It's just to feel good. And even though there's a little bit of drama involved, you don't care about the drama because you know it's all going to work out. So it's just I just want to get to the ending and enjoy the movie. And it's Christmas time and it's a Christmas story and, it's supposed to be good. But today we're going to talk a little bit more about, as was mentioned in the main scripture, we're going to talk about more of a Grinch-style Christmas story. Because even though it's a Christmas story that we've heard, I don't know, I was doing the math, I've missed a couple over the years. When did I start to actually get to the point where I was old enough that I understood the Christmas story? So what are we talking, 44, 45 maybe? Christmas stories that I've sat on Sundays and listened to, give or take one or two, military out at sea, sometimes you couldn't make it work, whatever, even though they, typically where you were stationed, there was always a chapel somewhere. But my point being, most of us could stand up here and walk through that story pretty easily. What happened, how the scripture referenced things, but with the series that that Dave laid out for us these past few weeks, we're digging a little deeper. We're looking a little closer at some of the characters in the Christmas story. And as I sat down this week and I did some research, I came to the realization that this story that we've heard so many times in our lives really had a bad angle to it. Now, even though we know that, we kind of know how it plays out, until I really started looking at it, and as was referenced in the main scripture, I didn't realize how bad Herod was. The neat thing about Herod is, as we, again, I've often referenced, there's many people that sit here with us this morning that can reference a lot of scripture that I have to actually open up and go to remember. But Herod is one of those characters in the Bible that you can Google, you can whatever Bing, whatever search engine you use, you can research him as not just a biblical figure in history, but as just a historical figure. King Herod is one of those people that just really fit into a category of mean and ruthless rulers. So as we study the Christmas story these past few weeks leading up to Christmas, today that's one of the things that we're going to dig deeper into is Herod and why he was part of the story. One of the angles that as I decided what I wanted to talk about this morning, one of the things was, why did he have to be involved? Why did it have to go down that road? And I think I kind of got the answer. It's speculation on my part, but hopefully that led me to some answers, why Herod had to be a part of our Christmas story and kind of bring us down, kind of like the Grinch did, in that movie. I will tell you that one of the things that I noticed, and I don't know if this was always the case, there's actually a timer in front of me. And I don't know if it was always there. I just noticed it the other week. And so to put you at ease, sometimes I get a little carried away and get a little winded and get a little wrapped up in what I'm saying. I actually can watch how long I've been talking now. So, for what that's worth. But yeah, as I was saying, Herod, you know, he's one of those historical figures that there's references to that if you want to go on and jump on the computer and do a little bit more background, so to speak, as to his part in the Christmas story. There's a lot of information out there. So Herod wasn't a very nice man. In 47 BC, he was referred to as Herod the Great. He would have only been 25 years old. At that point, he was just named the governor of Galilee, which would have been an extremely high position for a young man of his age. And, of course, this is the Romans putting him in place. And they are hoping, essentially, that he can pacify the Jews. It's kind of a turbulent time. There's a lot going on. And again, they want to bring someone into power that they think can maybe quiet things down a little bit, make their rule a little bit easier. So he kind of basically does that, but the way he does it is, you know, somewhat ruthless in many ways. And later he married into a Jewish family, the Hasmoneans. His wife was named Miriam. And in 40 BC, 7 years later, the Roman Senate names him King of the Jews. Pretty strong title, considering that we know that we reference, you know, when we think of King of the Jews, we don't typically think of Herod. So, of course, obviously, the Jews hated this title. One, because he wasn't a Jew by birth, and he wasn't a practicing Jew by religious aspects as well. So, years go by. He's obviously, again, he's put in place for a reason. He's very clever. He's very cruel. And he was one of those people that would do what he had to do to stay in power. He killed a lot of people over the years, according to a lot of the studies and references. And to put it in perspective, some of the people he killed, his brother-in-law, his mother-in-law, his wife. I was going to throw a joke in there, but... No, just kidding. So it kind of puts in perspective what this man was like in real life. Obviously, as we know it, as it played out in the Christmas story, we realize that he had it in him all along. But again, I didn't, until, again, after 40-some times, I don't remember ever looking deep enough at Herod to realize that some of the things he did in his rule. It's speculated that the murder of his wife is what drove him mad. Most people, when you study, again, from a historical figure point of view, studies of Herod, most people think that he was mad. But he killed her because he thought she was a threat to his power. And supposedly he never really got over her. He was 44 years old when he killed her, and he lived to be 70. So there were a lot of years that he dealt with the murder of his wife. And again, speculation is that that played a large part in his life and how he was towards people. So Herod was obviously a killer. He had no problem killing people close to him. He wanted to hang on to the reins of power. Had the Roman Empire behind him, and they, I'm sure, knowing how things were in that period of history, didn't really care how he did what he did and how he got business done, as long as he basically kept the Jews quiet and everything was running smoothly. So he didn't have to worry about that aspect of it. He was referred to as a maniac, barbaric. One incident, 7 BC. Herod is an old man. He's been in power for 41 years. Again, back then, a long time for someone to live. I sometimes wonder if that is just ironic or if that was part of the plan. Obviously, our father has everything planned out, so I assume that Herod living to be so old, you know, was part of his plan. But 41 years in power, he knows he doesn't have a lot longer to live, ill health. Word comes to him that his sons are going to overthrow him, which we see many times in power struggles in government. You know, a ruler will get word that he's going to be overthrown by someone, not typically necessarily family, but... And they do what they need to do. So these are sons through his late wife, Miriam. And he orders them put to death by strangling. And again, that really just put it in perspective for me. Caesar Augustus even said it is safer to be Herod's sow than his son. So being a family member, being a part of Herod's family obviously meant nothing. You know, we think about modern history and it, you know, I tried to put in perspective and it really hit home that, you know, Herod was, you know, extremely methodical, ruthless in staying in power. We think about Stalin a little more recently. Many people died under his, you know, his time in office in the Soviet Union. Hitler, of course, comes to mind. He would do what he needed to do. I think one of the reasons he was able to stay in power, there's many stories in history that there were plots to overthrow him, many within his circle, and there was always that great fear to proceed with anything because they knew that if they were caught or found out, what would happen to them, and in many cases, it did happen to them. And so that was another comparison I thought of when I thought of Herod. President Assad in Syria. More recently, ISIS. You know, when I thought about the ruthlessness of Herod and how he dispatched with some of the people that threatened him, one of the most ruthless things I can think of in recent memory is when ISIS started coming to power, when we saw videos of beheadings. That is Herod. That was Herod. He didn't think twice about how he took someone's life, and all he cared about was the fact that it would keep him in power. So a couple years later, Herod's dying, again, still slowly dying, described by many as having some type of distemper, foul breath, skin covered in sores, losing his mind rapidly, but he's still the king, again, doing what he needs to stay in power. And one day word comes to him that some visitors have arrived from the east, some strange men with a strange question. They are the Magi, the wise men from the east. I won't get into that too much because I need to save that for next week. So we'll go a little deeper on them next week. But they had journeyed across the desert to seek an interview with Herod. Again, this is where it comes into the story. And the important thing to Herod was not who they were, but what they asked. Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay homage. Matthew 2:2. So these three men come to Herod, who is in charge. Obviously, they figure, well, he's got to know what's going on. He's the ruler of this area. And when I thought about why he was in this story and why he was brought into the mix, I think that was my conclusion, that it put in perspective the fact that these three men, again, important figures in the story that we've all heard about over the years, a lot of times we see the picture of them, the, you know, all their fancy dress and clothing, and they're coming to the most powerful man in that area to ask a question. So while I often thought, why couldn't they have bypassed Herod and skipped him and not brought him to the story and not brought a lot of heartache into a lot of people's lives down the road, I think it was, A, crucial because it really put in perspective the fact that Christ was about to be born and the fact that Christ held more power than Herod and that his importance in this story. So to go to the man that currently is in power, the most important man in the area, three other very important people in life, I think they had to go to him and ask him and bring him into the picture. Put into perspective, even though Herod was at the time borderline insane probably, the fact that here's a man that can pretty much rule with an iron fist, but yet he's now scared because he's heard about this person that's about to be born. So at the end of the day, he knows he needs to do something. He knows he needs to find out what's going on. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. You can only imagine, having known what we already know, just talking this little bit about Herod. Disturbed puts it in perspective. I can only imagine the fear. You know, he's getting older, he knows he's going to die, he's still trying to hang on to power, losing his mind. Now he's really disturbed. And we can only imagine that he's already putting into motion what he needs to do to take care of this young child that's about to be born. So Herod obviously was not a religious man, but he knew that the Jews were looking for Messiah. He knew the background. He knew the backstory. He knew God was supposed to send someone to save them and reign as king. Not being a religious man, I assume he probably didn't take the religious aspect of it too seriously. He probably didn't think Christ was the Son of God. We can only assume that, again, not being religious, not being truly of the Jewish faith, he probably didn't care about that aspect of things. But more importantly, he was worried that the Jews would potentially think of this man as their new ruler and their new king, and that would be a problem. Potentially open the eyes of the Romans to say, hey, wait, this guy's losing control. We need to do something. The last thing he wanted to do was bring the Romans into the picture and have them question his rule. When he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, and thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah? For out of the three shall come a governor that shall rule my people of Israel. So you can see that he went to the priests and the scribes because they knew the story. They knew how things were supposed to play out. And he went to them for information. And scripture says that he called them all together to try to get a little bit more information together so he could do what he needed to do. Most tyrants, as we know through history, are cowards at heart to some extent. They rule by force. And again, one thing that they typically fear is something that is a greater force than theirs. And he knew that, again, based on the religious beliefs, those that he ruled over, this was definitely something that he needed to be concerned about and feel threatened by. Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, go and search diligently for the child. When you have found him, bring me word, that I too may come and worship him. So, obviously, as we know from hearing the story over the years, his intent when he did this was to trick them. He figured, okay, so I'm going to tell these, help them out. They're going to help me out. They're going to go find him. And when they do, on their way back, they're going to stop back and they're going to tell me where he's at, so I can go take care of what I need to take care of to continue my rule, and we can just all move past this, and, you know, I can end my life as a ruler, and everybody's happy. And so, question that I came across when I was doing a little bit of studying was, you know, many talked about why Herod didn't go himself. Many speculated that he just didn't want to bring too much attention to himself. He wanted to just do kind of behind the scenes what he needed to do. It's kind of one of the best speculations that I, you know, came across, and I think that probably makes sense for a type of person like himself. And at that point, he's probably not handling himself very well. My guess is he probably doesn't like to do a lot of highly visible public things as a ruler of that nature probably would be. Being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. So, Scripture tells us that they were warned. They were told. They were basically said, listen, don't do it. Don't go back. It's bad news. Herod's tricked you. So, after they visit and, you know, see the baby, you know, they visit with Christ in the manger, they move on and they go back to their own country. And that's, again, we'll get into that a little bit more next week. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt. So again, God gives warning to Joseph and Mary so that they can get out of Bethlehem and go to Egypt. So at this point, Herod's very old, very sick, losing control. He knows he's dying. He's angry over being tricked. He knows the Magi went their own way back to their countries. So he still needs to do something about the baby. At this point, he's out of his mind with rage, frustration, fear, pain. He's insane. We talk a lot, I've mentioned many times, we talked about emotions and how they motivate you. His emotions had to be getting the best of him, even if he wasn't insane, his fear, his anger. So after all these years, the one thing that we remember is the one act that we can reference, that even if you don't look at history, there's a lot of different versions historically, but even if we don't do that, the one reference that most people will remember Herod for all these years later is this one final act that he thinks is the only thing he can do to complete what he thought he needed to do to maintain power. Matthew 2:16-18. "Then Herod, when he saw that he was deceived by the wise men, was exceedingly angry, and he sent forth and put to death all the male children who were in Bethlehem and all its districts, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the wise men. Then was fulfilled that was spoken by Jeremiah 31:15, the prophet." So, there's a lot of speculation when I did some historical study. Obviously, we know that Herod had no problem being ruthless, killing people. There were a lot of descriptions, and again, one of the closest things I could think about was the beheadings from ISIS in recent memory. But to put it in perspective, I don't know how many children would have been in that age range in Bethlehem at that time, fairly large town at that time. So I don't know. I didn't get that far in my research. One of the things I want to follow up on this week, maybe somebody knows and can catch me on my way out this morning, what most people speculate the number was. But it was described as they would go into a house, like 2-3 soldiers, maybe more, and would grab the infant. One would hold the infant's arms, one would hold the infant's legs, and a third would slit the infant's throat. And basically leave it there, and that was that. Can't even imagine. Again, I look back and I question that, why that had to be part of the story, why, when we talk about the sad part of a Christmas story, I think it all came into play just because of the relevance and importance of the fact that the most important man, the ruler at that time, feared that little baby that much. That even though he wasn't religious, he knew that there was so much power in the word, the scripture, to that point that people believed so much in the fact that this was their new ruler, the new king of the Jews, that he had to do what he had to do. And I think that really, again, lets us know when we read the scripture that Christ was that important. And anybody else that we share that story with? "After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, 'Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel. For those who were trying to take the child's life are dead.'" Matthew 2:19-20. So basically the story, as far as Herod's concerned, and it all wraps up with Herod dying. The Lord lets Joseph know it's okay. Everything's safe now. You can go back. "He came to his own people, and his own people received him not." As I close up now, I try to think of the takeaways to the story of Herod. And that one piece of scripture that we end up with is one of the main takeaways that I came up with. Christ was sent to us, and Herod being the main example, knowing that he was not going to be received kindly. There were people out there, including many of the religious faith at the time, the Jewish faith, that wanted him dead. that wanted nothing to do with him. And yet, our Father saw fit to send him down, put him in that place, again, hatred, not being received again by his own people. So one of the main takeaways from that for me for this week was, you know, how did I come to accept Christ in my life? And am I always, every day in my life, still willing to receive him into my life? Do I sometimes turn away from him, as many people back then did? I hope that's not the case, but again, we've talked about that. There are times in your life where you're confronted by evil, and sometimes you turn away from Christ. I do. So when we think about that, we think about the fact that he was sent to us and all the things that went on with Herod. Did we receive him, and do we still receive him daily into our lives? The friend of mine often says, you know, life's not always about kittens and rainbows. So there are a lot of Herods in this world. They make life as a Christian sometimes difficult. We all have Herods in our lives, I'm sure. How we deal with the Herods in our lives, maybe that's the takeaway this week. I don't know. But you know that, again, it's not always going to be rosy. There's going to be things that you have to come up against. But again, even knowing all that, our Father sent his Son into our lives. So as I close this morning, thank you again for your time. If there's anything the church can do for you this morning as we stand and sing, please come forward. There's a baptism already. If anyone wants to be baptized, receive Christ in their lives. Thank you for your time, and hopefully you take something out this week. Thank you.